Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We begin by acknowledging the Gabigabi people, the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast episode is being recorded today, and pay respects to their elders, past and present, and to their parents with children with disabilities.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F-word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Well, you probably won't hear quite so much swearing among the beans, you know. Well, yeah. Not suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, peas and beans. Gary Bean here, welcoming you to this episode where I chat to a lovely dad, very interesting guy named Rob Hale, and I'll tell you about him in a moment. But before that, I want to let you know that I had the most fascinating and enjoyable hour or so just a few nights ago in a group conversation with some beans, Daniel Davis Wood, Kirk Thompson, and Dino Trenton, and I got together across time zones. Daniel's in Scotland, just outside Edinburgh in Scotland, and of course the rest of us are down under. So it was 7 p.m. here, 10 a.m. there. That didn't seem to be an issue, and all of the technology behaved itself. And we spent about an hour or so introducing ourselves to you, the listener, with a couple of interesting little exercises that I thought were fun, profound, and I think you'll find very interesting to listen to. For example, I asked each of the dads to canvass their wives beforehand with some questions, and the wives answered those questions, and then each of the dads reported to the group what the questions were and responded. The first question was, what kind of a musical instrument am I? Or what kind of an animal am I? And we were able to then discuss those answers and what that meant. And it gave us a chance, I mean, it's a bit of fun, but it gave us a chance to explore something about our personalities and our character and the differences that we bring to the conversation. And I think you'll find that you will really just enjoy getting to know all four of us as dads. There are some raw moments of expressing some very deep and important truths. There are some laughs. And there are some really interesting observations from each one. I've asked each of these dads to do this as an experiment. These are three of the dads who I have interviewed for Beans Talks over the past few months. There are many others, and there are some other dads there that I would dearly love to invite in as well. But four is really a manageable number. So I invited each one, Daniel, Dean, and Kirk, and they all readily agreed, and it's going to be great. So what we're going to do is, from time to time, we will get together and produce a four-bean mix, especially for your consumption, for your enjoyment. And we will talk as dads. We will talk about dads as children with disabilities and additional needs. We will talk as blokes who are husbands and who are sons and who have the experiences that they bring together of a commonality, but also each as an individual. And what I'm really hoping is, peas and beans, are you listening? I'm really hoping that you will get in touch through a SpeakPipe or through an email or in the Hangout on Facebook and just pose some questions for the four beans. These can be real. Let's stay with the vegetables. These can be hot potatoes. Any question you like, you know, anything you'd like to put to the dads and have us discuss, we'd be very happy to do it. It can be a topical issue. It can be something to do with the way you are navigating your family's challenges and opportunities. It can be something about Australian men, about blokes, about husbands, about, you know, whatever you think you'd like to ask us, we would love to hear from you. So we'll let you know in advance when the first four bean mix is available, and that's the one when you'll hear us introduce ourselves to you through these interesting little conversations that we had. It was great fun. And I'm very grateful to all three of the guys for being willing to get involved and to give this a go, because I think it can be an important and an interesting and an enjoyable exercise for everyone, for those of us who are in it and for those of you who are listening. Today I'm speaking to Rob Hale. Rob is a fellow podcaster. He has the Dadability podcast, and he'll talk all about that in the conversation that you're about to hear. I really did enjoy talking to Rob, and I'm hoping we can talk again, and I'm hoping we can sort of support each other in our podcasting endeavors. So this is me recently talking to Rob Hale. G'day, Rob.
G'day, Gary.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for this. It's good to catch up with you at last. We've been playing tag for a little while now, but here we are at last. How are you this morning?
I'm doing very well, thank you, mate.
Yeah? Everything okay at your place?
Everything is okay at our place, yes. So we're good.
Okay, that's good to hear. And I've been looking forward to this. You're a fellow podcaster, so we're going to talk about that a little bit, and we're going to talk about dadness, and we're going to get to know each other a bit. So let's start with the three icebreaker questions. Rob, where are you from? And where are you now?
Well, I'm from Sydney, Gary, and I'm still now in Sydney. So I haven't really moved very far in my time on this planet. So, in fact, I'm only 10 minutes away from where I grew up in my family home. So with my new family now. So come full circle almost. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. And so you have other family there in Sydney as well?
I do, yeah. My elder sister and my parents both still alive, and they live, they live just about 10 minutes away.
Well, that's great. And what about Monique? Where's she from? And obviously, does she have family around her as well?
Yeah, she does. She's from the Central Coast, just outside of Sydney. So she's up there, and her she's got some family that still live up there as well. But obviously now closer to my family. So we did spend a couple of years living closer to her family on the Central Coast, but now we're back here, always trying to keep a little bit close to support networks with the family dynamics. It's helpful. We're grateful to be able to be close.
Yeah, I was going to say that's such a huge thing, being around family, especially if you're, you know, connected and you're getting on well. Okay, thanks for that. It's a good start. Sydney. All right. Okay. Well, we won't bag Sydney too much in this episode, although I might. But anyway, that's fine. So, listen, if you could have someone over for dinner, whether they are somebody famous or not, whether it's somebody living or historical, who's somebody you would love to sit down and share a meal with?
You know, there's a few choices, Gary. I'm going to be cheeky and try and narrow it down. But if I was in a bad mood, I'm a massive Seinfeld fan. So if I was having a really rough time when this dinner was on, I'd probably be giving Jerry Seinfeld a call to come round for dinner, and I think that would be a fantastic night I'd never forget. But if I was feeling okay and I didn't need as much of a laugh, the inner athlete child in me would I grew up playing basketball, watching basketball, obsessed with Michael Jordan, the Bulls, he was kind of a bit of a role model for me as I was a kid growing up and what he's achieved. So I think I couldn't go past him, to be honest. I think I'd have to sit down with the great man.
So do you still play?
In the driveway. Yeah, put it that way, in the driveway.
You got a hoop in the driveway. Well, that's great.
We do.
That's
good. Yeah. My elder son plays, and he plays pretty well. My elder son is 16, and he's better than me at 16. Just ask him; he'll tell you. So we've gone some pretty heated competitions in the driveway on Christmas Day and Father's Day and birthdays. That's kind of when we bust out the 1-on-1 in the driveway to see who takes the bragging rights. I hold my own, considering I'm 3 times his age. I hold my own, but he's very quick to remind me he's better than me. Yeah,
that's the way it goes, hey. And Jerry Seinfeld, yeah, did you ever see him do that routine about he gets very angry because he can't figure out where ants are going. You know, have you heard that routine? He said, where are ants going? You know, they go in all different directions and they never seem to be going anywhere. You put your foot in front of it and it changes direction. So where was it going before? And where is it going now? You know, this is a bit strange. He's, good for a laugh. That's always good. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, that would be an interesting dinner. So let's come to the third question and we'll sort of start to drill down a little bit here. Why would you be called a bean?
Well, I'm a bean, Gary, because our youngest son, Leo, he's 5 going on 6 and he has a diagnosis of ASD. He's ASD 3, in fact. He's nonverbal and doesn't talk with words at this stage, although he can communicate in other ways. And he's also, you know, more recently diagnosed with a moderate intellectual disability as well. So, he's at almost 6 now, and that I think he was diagnosed about 2.5 was when. So we've kind of been almost just over 3.5 years kind of so with on this journey so far as a bean and lived experience. And I kind of say to people that I probably knew nothing, and I was quite ignorant, I think, to the disability community, certainly to autism itself, to many aspects that I'm now intimately acquainted with. I was certainly had no real knowledge. So it's been quite I tended to immerse myself in everything to accept it and to help. And it's been a bit of a roller coaster, as I'm sure most dads and beans can relate to. But I'm better for it. I'm learning every day, and but it does have its challenges. That's why I'm a bean. I'm also, as I mentioned earlier, I've got an elder son, 16. He's from my wife's earlier marriage. So I'm, you know, by default, stepdad to him, although that's never really been a thing in this household. I've kind of been his dad for the last 8, almost 9 years now. So, so that's our little family dynamic. A teenager and a 5-year-old, so it makes for interesting both boys. But that's why I'm a bean, man.
Wow, thanks, mate. A lot there we can talk about. Yeah. Can we meet Leo first up? Can we?
Of course.
Describe Leo to us. You know what gets this guy energized, and what's he like? You say he's almost 6.
Yes.
Nonverbal. But let's if I was to meet you and him in the park, who's this little bloke that I'm meeting? What's he like?
So he's high energy. He's probably the most active kid I reckon that goes around. He'd be hard pressed for someone to out energize him. He's I remember a trip to the hospital once, and we saw some of the things that the nurses wrote on his chart. He was in there for something else, and they just wrote active +++++ because he was just we found it hilarious. He's very energetic. He's high energy, so he's got a little top knot. He's got this blonde hair in a little top knot, so he's kind of quite a cool. Yeah, it's got quite a cool vibe to him, but it's kind of grown in his personality, ironically, because he didn't like us playing with his hair or cutting his hair, and it just kind of it happened very naturally that his hair just became long, and then we kept it long, we put it up in a little top knot bun for him, and he's just started regulating on it and using it to calm himself, and it's now it's almost it's part of him now almost, and that he'll often play with it to regulate himself if he's having a hard time. So if we don't put it up there, we run the risk of him losing something that he needs to help himself. So it's just kind of who he is, but he's kind of I couldn't imagine him without it. So but he's high energy, he's very active. His favorite things include jumping, bouncing. He loves balls, all shapes, all sizes. He loves a trampoline. He loves running. He loves being chased. And he just, he almost acts like a ball, to be perfectly honest. He's he likes to bounce himself up and down and jump around. So, but he's very kind natured. I think he's a big lover. One of the things he learnt to do very early on was when he shifted from being focused on objects to being focused on faces, and we tried very hard and worked a lot with him to get that I suppose progress for him and help him on his journey. But he learnt to respond to kiss. So he actually do it to a stranger, even if you wanted to. So if you met him in the park, Gary, and you leant down and said, "Leo, kiss," he'd actually give you a kiss on the cheek. He's very affectionate like that, and he's just got a, I suppose the other thing about him, he's got a very happy demeanor. Like he wakes up giggling. So we'll hear in the house when Leo's awake, because we'll hear this giggling and laughing and playing. So that's his demeanor. That's his default status. He's got a happy disposition, which is I'm very enviable of, because it takes a lot to for him to not be that way. Like, that's his position. So we're lucky, we're fortunate in that regard, because I think he views the world in a very very positive way in his world. And he's just curious as well. That's the other thing that Leo's about. He's curious. So he's interested in things, in the smallest things, in the detail of things. He's very observant. He likes to see what's going on at all times. So visually, he's got quite a strong stim that he does with his hand, but it's always to try and increase the visual stimulation he's getting. So, he's quite visual in that regard as well.
I always love listening to someone describe their child, no matter who it is. Mate, that was just gorgeous. Thank you. I feel like I've met him a little bit. And that was the idea. And everyone's been listening and smiling as you've been talking. How do you keep up with all that energy? Like, so does he sleep okay?
He actually is one of his strengths. Maybe he gets it from me. I've always been able to fall asleep any time. But he's we had him on a good routine long before his diagnosis. We kind of got a few tips from midwives, etc. And very early on, we had a nighttime bath routine, bed routine that made him, I think, very accustomed to what that looked like. So to this day, it's one of his strongest routines, and people with children with ASD will realize that routine is a huge thing for them. And he's, to the point of blinds down, lights dimmer, bath, dinner, bed, in that order. And if he ever wakes up in the middle of the night, which is very rare, we actually just replay that routine and he goes back to sleep, as in the sense we would put him in the bath, he'd watch a bit of TV, has something to eat, and then he'd go back to bed, because that's he's quite locked in on that routine. So he'll sleep, to be honest, mate, I'm sorry for everyone else listening, he'll sleep about 12 hours a night straight through it. But I would too if I was him and I'd done what he'd done during the day.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's burning a lot of energy. So you and Monique have been able to at least keep up with your own sleep along the way. That sounds like the case. That's great. What about during the daytime, though? I mean, he's never going to stop during the day, by the sound of it. So how do you cope with that?
He doesn't. We've got into a bit of a groove around a rest. It was a nap, and he's always been okay for a nap when he was at home and he wasn't at daycare when he was younger, or when now he's at school, he's in kindy. So it's mainly just on the weekends and school holidays, but we can get him, again, because he's quite drilled into that routine of nap from a younger age, we can get him in for about an hour and a half rest in his room. But, to give everyone a visual, Leo's bed, if you like, is a oversized giant cot. So we built as he was transitioning and he became too big for a cot, we kind of upgraded to a single bed. But we're so worried based on his communication lack of communication and inability to understand that he has to go back to sleep and he can't play and he can't get up whenever he wants, that we kind of just grew his cot, if you like. So we built a custom kind of fence that looks exactly like a cot around a four-post kind of house-looking bed. And that's what he's got to this day. So he sleeps in there and he likes it. He likes the security and the comfort of that space. It's his space. We say, what do you want to take with you? And he'll take some toys or he'll take some food or both, and chooses it each time, knows it. And he just views it now as time to himself, to the point that as much as it's good time for us to give a bit of a breather, or my wife particularly, who does probably a little bit more of that on the school holidays, et cetera, and the weekends. But it's he likes it and he'll usher us out if we're hanging around too long and he wants his space and close the door. So, that's helpful for us. Doesn't mean that he doesn't request things, Gary. Like, he'll still have us beckoning on. He's got about 60 different ways of saying ah, because he doesn't talk. He does still vocalize, and he'll ah, and it's just the tone, the speech, the pitch, the urgency. We have to interpret the different meanings of ah. And he's known to do a few up in his bedroom to request, you know, a drink or a balloon or something that he wants us to get for him. he'll beckon us like he's a king. Sometimes you say sometimes he's a bit of King Leo. He'll beckon us up to do something for him with a vocal request. So it's quite funny.
I do like King Leo. That's excellent. So I was going to ask you about communication. Obviously, he's cool with understanding your communication, and you have ways to work your way through the day with understanding him. So do you feel like that's getting better or as he gets older?
I'd say slow progress. Reflecting on it, I'd say slow progress. He's always been quite visual, and we've known him to be quite visual. We've tried to play into that as best we can. So he started with PECs. He started with PECs and using the picture exchange system. He didn't ever progress to building sentences, but he could certainly look at a picture and point it and identify it. And he understood that, and the handing of the picture to us, he could come and find us and give us something. And so that one he kind of was able to do. And now at kindy, at his special school that he goes to, they use Proloquo to go, which some parents I'm sure are familiar with in terms of that
absolutely.
That yep. app. And again, he's not in sentences. He's just in he can't do a I want X water, but he'd just go straight to water, for example, and press that. And he'd so visually he's super strong. So we use that as a strong communication cue, but that also means without even saying anything, so non-verbal visually. So he can, yes, he can point at pictures or help us there, but he can, I say, also things that we want, if we want him to see something or not see something, we have to either put it out or hide it. So anything that's out is fair game in Leo's world. Anything that's away, so we have to use that, and we find ourselves, you know, clearing the tables because we're worried that if he sees it and he can't have it, that's going to risk a huge communication issue for us. So we kind of, we're very mindful of what's around visually for him to see and what his cues are, to the point, Gary, that getting him ready for school, there's a whole visual cue set up that goes with that. So there's a specific table that we'll put his school uniform on, and we'll do that 30 minutes before we need him to get ready. So he clocks it and realizes, I'm going to school, I can see that coming, rather than jump it on him and say, it's time for school, and try and get him to transition that quickly and process everything. We've just learned a lot about how we need to work with him, which, you know, again, most parents of kids with ASD3 particularly might understand that transitions are a huge challenge for many of us. It certainly is for Leo. We've learned that the best way to help Leo with transitions is give him the time, not surprising. So everything's kind of down to a time for us. So we'll get him up an hour and a half before he needs to go anywhere. He needs that time. If it's shorter than that, we can expect challenge. We can expect pushback. We can expect disruption. He's not ready. He hasn't processed it yet. So again, we try and put things out there visually to help him and help us. And that tends to work. It gives him that element of routine as well. And he can plug into it a little bit. So visually, we've worked quite hard as well. But Leo's quite resourceful. So he'll, if he can get it himself or he can do it himself, he'll actually go and do it, as in open the fridge, get juice out, open the pantry, get biscuits out. He's quite self-driven in that regard. Like he'll, if he can do it, he'll want to do it, because that's easier than I suppose communicating in many respects. He can just go and do it himself, and he's still got a lot of he might sound quite independent. He's far from that. When it comes to food and playing, he's got a good level of dependence. He can get his toys, he can play, he can get himself things if he's hungry or thirsty, etc. But when it comes to his own self-care, he still relies on us for dressing, for changing, for, you know, hair, every teeth, everything. So, kind of how we're communicating with him. But I suppose, yeah, it's progressed, Gary, it's progressed. But and we've got our own thoughts on communication, and that we've got a, I don't know if it's an interesting outlook or attitude as parents, but it doesn't actually bother us whether Leo talks. We're more interested in, like, we don't have that as a goal. We're not hung up on that, and we're not. I certainly don't have that belief. We've more let's explore every option. Let's see what he gravitates to. Let's find what works for him, and let's keep, you know, feeding that and see what happens. And if he talks, fine. If he doesn't, fine. But we're certainly not going to force, this is the way you'll need to communicate. We're just waiting to see which one he prefers, if that makes sense.
That's fantastic, mate. Oh, yeah, it makes perfect sense. I mean, communication is far richer and deeper and broader than words, even though words tend for most of us to be at the center. But, yes, it sounds like you communicate a lot and really well, but it raises the question for me. Obviously, you in your home, you and Monique can control a lot of things and assist and make sure that you smooth the way and the routines there and so on. How's his experience at school been?
It's been very interesting for us. It's been a little bit disrupted by illness from himself and other kids, which has been a bit frustrating. By and large, it's been interesting in the sense that we've learned that he's got probably some of the highest support needs at school out of his class. It's a small class. It's a great school that specializes in kids with disabilities. But he's got a class of 9 with a couple of teachers' aides. So it's well staffed, but he's still, you know, when we went to meet the teachers and understand how's he going and what's happening and try and get a sense of it, because whilst they send pictures throughout the day, it's kind of a snapshot in time. It doesn't really tell us, you know, what's really happening. And we've seen that, you know, they're probably pushing Leo harder than what I suppose I've done, what we've done at home, in that in terms of his learning, which is kind of the whole point, right? They probably know best, but they're certainly pushing him to do different things and make progress in terms of his learning and his skills and everything that they need to be doing. So I think he doesn't cope with all of it. He certainly
has. Do they communicate with you about that, or do you have opportunities to talk about that with them?
Yeah, they're pretty good. I mean, they'll send us an individual kind of summary each week on how his week's gone and what's happened. And at first I was a bit, you know, we read an email once that was like, Leo's been, you know, he's been very upset and frustrated. He's had lots of, you know, overloads. He's been quite physical with the kids and with us. And I kind of read it and thought, oh, I've got to fix it. I've got to call them. I've got to talk to them about it. We've got to work on a strategy together. And I jumped to a conclusion that, you know, I needed to do it and fix it. And in fact, when we end up speaking to the teachers, they were were very much, no, we're just letting you know. We've got it under control. We don't, here's the plan, here's the behavior plan, here's the approach we're taking, here's how we're working him through it. So it was just.
Wow, that's quite a moment. And do you trust them to be?
I do.
Yeah, I do.
And in fact, I think they're playing an important role for Leo that we probably really need.
Because
you know, my wife's tougher on him than I am. I'm probably a bit softer on him than I need to be. But we learned a long time ago from our Leo saw a behavioral therapist for most of his from three to five, and she's been fantastic for him in helping him and helping us with managing some of his tougher behaviors when they happen. And she said to us a long time ago, like, you guys are sometimes you have to be aware that you're enabling it because you don't say no as often as you might need to. And that's, you know, probably more directed at me. I kind of always want the time to be fun and enjoyable. So it's hard for me to say no to him sometimes. But in doing that, it enables this. He doesn't learn the boundary. He doesn't learn the when it's okay, when it's not okay. And I can't just walk on eggshells just for fear of saying no because of what that may do, which it has done. And Leo, at his worst, has been, you know, he's put his head through a glass window, Gary. He's in his room. He's head-butted many things in his younger days, as when he had probably more communication issues and frustrations than he does now. He's certainly improved. But because of those experiences, I think naturally we're very mindful, and I'm certainly mindful as a dad. Like, I'm trying to avoid them where I can, and hence you learn the different ways to communicate, the different things to do to try and minimize those. So I think, long way of saying that, I think school's playing a really important role that helps us and makes it easier, because he's hearing, no, you can't go outside, probably 10 times before lunch, because he just loves outside. He's probably hearing that. So he's getting used to the more structure, more routines, more boundaries, which then means that we have noticed a difference at home since he started kindy, that he's able to cope better with demands and instructions than he has been in the past. And I think that's just because he's just learning that it's not all King Leo's way the whole time. So school's certainly helping in that regard for us.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, and it's just the start of that journey for him, obviously. Well, but, you know, it's nice to hear that there's a communication going on with the school, that you trust them, that they're listening to you as well, and that you're listening to them. This is a realm I have no personal experience with, so I'm sure in awe of what you and Monique are contributing to his life. Let me ask you, you said that he has a happy disposition, and we get that. Do you?
Oh, you know what? I've had my moments, Gary, and it's I can look at my own kind of life to now. I'm 42. I look at it now as a couple of different defining moments, and I didn't have any kind of kids in my life, including my eldest, up until 34. So, right up until 34, I would have described myself as super positive, super happy, very optimistic, always glass half full, and you know, very uplifting kind of a guy. I'm still positive. That's still a trait I have, and I'm still, you know, always use my sense of humor and have a laugh and keep it light. But I think having kids and my first experience, obviously, with Riley, that was great. It was just more of a play partner and a friend to him, as coming in as a dad figure, and that was a great. You know, we built a really strong and close relationship in that respect. And again, nothing really changed in terms of my disposition. I think I had a little bit of postpartum depression after Leo was born, which kind of threw me, because it was my first experience into actually even trying to understand sometimes mental health won't always be perfect. And that threw me, you know, I'm very proud, I'm very driven, very been quite successful. So I kind of put high expectations on myself as a dad. And so when that happened, it threw me. It had an impact on my work at the time, had an impact on my family at the time. And so, but it didn't last, thankfully. So that was fine. And then I think when Leo's diagnosis happened, again, you know, that's every parent goes through different stages in terms of acceptance. I think, you know, I still stand by that I accepted it fairly quickly in the grand scheme of things, because my motivation for Leo was to try and help him at whatever I could do. That just this provider kicked in of, okay, I just got to help him whatever I could do. But, you know, over time, unbeknownst to me, I was changing from a more of a happy, positive person to someone who just wasn't coping. And it got progressively worse, like a frog in boiling water kind of thing, that I couldn't see it as much on the outside as what Mon could and my family and other friends could. Like that, they could see it more than I could, and I was probably in a little bit of denial of how much it was affecting me. And so it did get to a point last year, actually, Gary, in August, so it's almost a year ago now, where it became far too overwhelming for me, and I was just, you know, super depressed and super stressed and burnt out, and I didn't really know what was happening, but I actually thought I need to sort this out. And my wife was great in helping me take a step to do that, because she could just tell that I wasn't going to be able to fix it on my own, and, you know, in her own way was able to encourage me to get me to see it and get some help. And thank God she did, because I didn't realize how much I needed it. So I ended up checking myself into a mental health clinic to get some professional help, and just say to you know, psychiatrists and psychologists, like, tell me what's going on. I need to understand it, because I can't. This is a marathon, not a sprint. Like, I'm going to have work. I'm going to have Leo. I'm going to have challenges for the rest of my life. It's not going to go away next month. So I need to be able to equip myself better. So it was 2 weeks where I really kind of did a lot of work on myself. I think they described it as the equivalent of about 52. It was about 52 hours worth of psychology and therapy, individual group therapy. It was very, very good for me. I didn't know what to expect, but I certainly got a lot of, skills and things in that I can now take with me, and I'm certainly stronger for it, better for it in my mind, to be able to cope with some of these challenges. But yeah, what most people probably haven't heard of it, but I was the diagnosis for myself at that time with the psychiatrist said that I had a adjustment disorder, which is a form of everyday PTSD. So PTSD is a traumatic event, and then you typically get some after effects of depression, and adjustment disorder is almost the inability to cope with everyday life when it gets too much, and it's a form of depression. So that's I'm now on some medication, which is fine. I don't mind that. I do meditation, you know, every day to keep myself, you know, much more in control of my mind. And it's a daily, weekly, sometimes hourly challenge, Gary. It's not done. I haven't just done it and now I can just move on. I'm tested most weeks. And sometimes the stress is from home, sometimes the stress is from work, but then it affects how I am at home. Ultimately, I just want to be the best dad I can be and the best husband I can be. And I've certainly changed my priorities and my focus, and I've certainly learned some ways to deal with stress better. But like I'm sure many, many people listening can attest to, it's so important to do some work on yourself if you need to not be too proud to get help or to ask for help, and to just try and, you know, I suppose make some steps forward. Because if as a parent to a child with a disability, if you're not able to kind of keep yourself going, it's so much harder to be everything you need to be for your kids and for your wife or your husband.
Mate, you're obviously very self-aware. And you also care. I mean, you know, you take steps when you are aware that something needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
Can I say good on you? I mean, that little description of what has been a profound 12 months, you know, or so, is a gift. Thank you for sharing that. I guess, did that kind of process begin the journey into dadability? Is that part of why you have done dadability? Explain dadability to our listeners.
Yeah, sure. You're absolutely right. That's exactly how it kind of started. So, dadability is a podcast that I've created fairly recently, and the goal is to connect other dads like me that get it, that need a place to be able to go to listen and to share and to hear stories to kind of normalize what dads are going through and give a place and provide that support. Because what I was so grateful for the development that I did, I suppose, on myself, and it just unlocked something in me that I was like, this is important work. Is every dad doing this? Does every dad need to do it? But, you know, probably I think every guy needs to, with disability, child or not, I think everyone needs to, you know, kind of work on themselves. But it certainly... Yeah. My experience, Gary, is that I've been almost 4 years with kind of this lived experience in the disability world, trying to cope, trying to figure it out on my own. And I was amazed at how many, my wife has found some good friends, also with, from different therapies that Leo's done throughout the years. She's met some great mums that she can talk to, that she has really close relationships with, not so much from a play date point of view, but more from a mum to mum when you need someone who knows what you're going through or you need to vent or whatever. And I think that was the pattern I saw, Gary. I just saw that was so easy. And then I thought, oh, there's nothing really like that for dads. And then when Leo started his school, it was great. I thought, I'm going to be part of a whole community with dads like me. This is going to be phenomenal. And then I also realized that we had a parents chat with all the mums and me. And I said to Mon,
familiar is that? Yes, indeed.
What's going on here? I was like, there's no other dads in this. I was like, oh, surely there's more dads. And I think it's probably a mistake that I assume that every dad thinks like me and wants to be as involved or whatever. But I certainly learned that there's different levels of involvement that dads want, different levels of advocacy or acceptance or vulnerability. There's lots of layers to unpack. So I'm certainly aware of that, but that was the motivation. So dadability was born out of the I'm sick of it there being a lot more support for mums and a lot more kind of information and you know, opportunities for mums to support each other. And I just wanted to have a low-touch vehicle, knowing that dads didn't want to get involved in a parents' chat of a school where they've got their children at. I just thought, there's got to be an easier way. What's low-touch? Well, I can listen to something on my way to work where I don't have to tell anyone that I'm, you know, and just maybe take something from it. And so that's kind of been the recipe. I've just tried to find dads that are happy to share their story to try and help everyone else realized that, man, I've gone through that. I'm going through that. Maybe if I did something there, that's a good idea. At least someone else gets it. So I'm also seeing they're not even talking sometimes to their wives, to their work. There's a lot of people that don't feel comfortable to do that. So that's what I'm hopeful, mate, with dadability, is that it just provides another option, right?
Fantastic, mate. Good on you. So how's it going? I mean, you say it's fairly new. How many episodes are there? We can find them all wherever we find podcasts, obviously. But you feel good about the way it's going?
Look, I feel good. I mean, it was just a, as I said, it's a passion project of mine. It's just to really try and help the community that I'm part of any way I can. And as I said, I've learned that not everyone's comfortable even talking or sharing. So I am. So I feel like it's a great use of my time. It's going. There's 16 episodes now, so it's been going just over 10 weeks.
Fantastic.
So so we're going well. I've just been really happy with the response. It's so rewarding. Like the reward, Gary, when I'm sure you'd experience this as well from doing this podcast. But just I've had a few people reach out to me, complete strangers, thanking me, telling me that it's made a difference, that they've got something from it, that, you know, thanks for the conversation. It's inspired them to do something. And that's, you know, I would have been happy with one of those, and there's been heaps. So that's everything for me, mate. That's enough to inspire me that it's doing some good, and I'll keep going. Yeah.
Well, good on you. Keep on it, because you don't know until over time how these things are going to unfold. And I've listened to a couple of episodes, and I just think, you know, it's fantastic what you're doing. Can you tell us, what are the three B's at the end of each episode? Explain that, unpack that for us a little bit, because that's I find that little signature to be wonderful.
Thank you, mate. Yeah, the B's are, you know, I've learned, you know, on this last, you know, particularly the last 12 months, that it's more important to be a human being than a human doing, right? So, you know, everyone's got to-do lists of what they want to do, and that's very much a work mindset and a work or a life admin mindset. But who you're being and having a to-be list of how do you want to be every day? You know, your happiness should be more based on who you're being, not linked to what you're doing. And it's, you know, might sound relatively straightforward, but it's been a bit of a game changer, and if you like, and it's you know, the three B's for me are reminders to myself as much as they're reminders to the rest of the dads. So I always sign off with be kind, be brave, and be present. And what they really represent is to, you know, be kind to yourself. This is tough stuff. Don't set the bar too high and feel like you're failing. Just be kind and know that if you're showing up and you're in the arena every day, you know, that's a great thing. So you're not always going to get it right. Accept it and be kind. And then being brave is about, you know, it's doing things that you need to do as a dad, as a parent, as a worker. Maybe it's sharing vulnerability. Maybe it's putting yourself in a situation with your child where you know it may not go well, but let's give it a try. Let's expand their world something. It's being brave to make some choices that are going to be best for you in the long term. And then the last one is being present, right? It's so much of everyone's day is spent worrying about what's coming and what's happened. And we're very good at it. And that's what causes anxiety, right? And then stress, and people are thinking about what's next and what didn't work and what they're going to do about it. But we miss this huge opportunity to be present. And when you've got a child with autism, they are some of the best teachers of being present. You know, Leo can be fixated on something that he just loves so much that you can't wave him. He's not distracted at all. And he's so present in the moment with such joy. And it's a great reminder every time I see him do it. It's a great reminder to me to just, that's where the moments are. Just put the phone down, put the, you know, stop thinking about, you know, work or whatever it is, and just spend that time. And ironically for me, be present so important is because that's when I can actually communicate with Leo the best. If I'm not paying attention, I won't see his cues. I won't pick up on his nonverbal, and I can't. So the hardest thing for someone to do would be to try and look after Leo without paying attention and being present. You'll struggle. So it's thankfully he's a great he's a great reminder of being present. But yeah, they're the three B's, mate. Be present, be brave, be kind.
Look, I mean, us blokes are a really weird species. I think, you know, there are things about us that are really strange, and so to take on the opportunity to maybe communicate with other dads and make a difference, and also just be encouraging, there's no real clear way in my experience of how to do that. Because we are dealing, men seem to be dealing with so many, like you said, multi-layered dynamics, that it's really hard often for us to even get started. Now, you know, you said there's resources for mums, and I think that's because mums go looking for them and they share them and they communicate, and they don't seem to have a difficulty connecting and being a tribe for each other, whereas we do. And so any attempt that's being made by a bloke for blokes has to be applauded. What I noticed the most about those three B's, though, which surprised me, I guess I should have thought of this, was for you, the be kind sounds like be kind to yourself.
Yes.
You know, understand yourself, be patient, etc. I was thinking immediately, okay, be kind to someone to each else other. Who's struggling with their disability or with your partner. Yeah. And, of course, I'm sure that's in there too. But being kind to yourself. Now, here I feel that men sometimes are mistaken. Like, it's not selfishness. It's not self-centeredness. No. It's not arrogance, being up yourself. To be kind to yourself is a whole different order of thing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Why is it difficult for men to be kind to themselves and not, and you know, get through the bullshit and be kind?
Well, from my perspective, my own experience in this is that what works for me in my professional life through work was actually being quite, and through sport actually, as a kid, basketball, et cetera, was actually being quite hard on myself. Because if I had a high standard, I would want to train harder. I'd take tremendous pride in what I'm doing, very dutiful, and wanted to achieve and keep achieving and grow a career and be the best team in sport. And so I think because guys grow up in this very competitive, you know, typically sport is part of, you know, dads, but, you know, and then in their career, they've probably been held or hold themselves to high performance. Certainly it was the case with me. And that always tended to work for me in my career. And then I went to I realized that I'm just trying to apply the exact same thing that worked for me in my career on top of being a dad. You know, in the weirdest of senses, Gary, but it was such a breakthrough moment because I thought, hang on, so I'm expecting this high performance dad at all times. You know, and my standards are I can never make a mistake. I've got to get it right. I've got to know what I've got to stay in control at all times. I've got to, you know, all these things that I should do and should expect of myself. And it's just, it's the opposite of being kind. It's the very reason why I ended up, you know, depressed, because I just really couldn't reconcile that I was doing a good job. So I would either focus on the things that I was doing and ignore it, which is a bad strategy, or more importantly, just beat myself up thinking that, you know, saying stupid things like, I can't do anything right. You know, I catch myself saying that all the time. Oh, I can't do anything right. I'm not helping at all. I'm no help. You know, well, really what happened is you did one thing that could have been better, but over the last day, everything else has been fine. So why am I talking to myself like that? And I think it's, for me anyway, the issue was I'd use that kind of mentality outside of being a dad, and I just tried to play the same approach, right, which just didn't work for me.
Yeah. And you would never say that to somebody else, the things you say to yourself.
No way.
You hold somebody else to that account.
No way.
And it's interesting to me that, I mean, there's no question us blokes can be complete dickheads, and there's no question about that, and there's no excuse for it, and it ought to be called out. But there are times when blokes are behaving in a way that is actually coming out of a sense of self turmoil that they're not facing or not admitting to, that, you know, causes dickhead behavior. And so the concept of being kind first, I just love that. I think it gives somebody the chance to get past whatever is offensive or derelict or whatever, and find out what's going on for that bloke and why that's the way it is. So, mate, you know, good on you. Keep up the good work. Your podcasts are fantastic, and I think, you know,
thanks, mate.
We'll make sure we put the link to it in our show notes, and anything we can do to, you know, help you with that journey as well would be something we'd like to do, because it really is, as you say, important work. Can I ask you, if I may, how are you and Monique?
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah, look, we support each other, and we have done every step of the way. I mean, I've got to give her, I'm so grateful for the support that she gives me. You know, she's the one that's brave enough to be able to tell me when, you know, she can see that I need help, or I'm like, what things I can't see in myself or my own mental health. So without that, I don't know where I'd be. So she's always in my corner. We kind of, try and prop each other up, although I think over the last, you know, year, 2 years, she's probably done a lot more of propping me up than I have of her. But, you know, we're a good team, and We're both stubbornly want to do what we can to support each other. Sometimes that's one of the things we clash on. I want to put her first. She wants to put me first, and we don't want to give an inch. that's a bit of an interesting way to clash sometimes. But I think just ultimately I'm lucky in that we've both got a similar attitude in terms of how we parent. How we've accepted, you know, Leo's disability and what that means. So I think in that respect, I know it's really testing for some relationships and some couples. Thankfully, we've been on the same page at each step of the way. But more importantly, man, I think we just support each other. So she's got some mental health concerns as well. She's bipolar too, so we've got to look after each other, because when we're at our worst, we still love each other, and we still, you know, can get through it, find a way to get through it. And obviously we're a lot stronger for some of the challenges that we've gone through. And I think I thanked her not long ago just to say, like, thanks for at each one of these, you know, turning points or key moments. It's pretty intense at the time sometimes with life, and you could easily make a choice to say, oh, I'm going to turn left while you're turning right, but we still keep turning the same way. So I'm very lucky to have her, and I'm much better for it. So behind every man is an even better woman, right?
Well, exactly. And we want to say good day to you, Monique. I know you're listening, and we've been, especially the mums, have been hearing about you and your role through Rob's words, and all the very best to you. And you know, your husband says he's lucky to have you. That's a good place to start. Sounds to me like he's been good to you too, as best he can. So we're probably getting close to running through to the end of our time here. Rob, was there something you wanted to say that we missed before you go?
Oh, no, I just think that I'd, it's talked about a lot, I think, with in this space, as I've started to understand it a bit more, particularly in connecting with other dads. But I know that everyone's got their own process and journey. I just think that the more people can be a bit more vulnerable as a dad, and find what that outlet is, if it's your wife, if it's your mate, if it's, you know, a podcast, if it's whatever. But just, I just think it's so important to be honest with yourself, and I'll be kind as well. But just so much, I've learned so much about myself, and I know it's a hard first step, but I would just say that, you know, it's important work. This is not about, you know, growing yourself and reading self-help books. This is about you being, you know, the best dad, and raising the best kids, and you know, doing what you can. So I think that's the reason why I'm passionate about helping support other dads, because I just see the value of what I'm able to do to try and help myself. But I just want I'm just relentless. I just want every dad to kind of see what I can see, mate, I suppose, and just be a bit more vulnerable and be a bit more there for each other, as you said, find the tribe, not in an excessive way, just in a way that's that blokes need, and in their own style. But just we've got to be there for each other, and we've got to help each other, because we can't just do it on our own. And I just hate hearing stories of guys struggling, dads struggling in particular, with their mental health, or not feeling comfortable that they've got anyone to talk to or share for fear, whatever their fear is. Whatever I can do to reduce that, mate. So to anyone listening who's kind of on that place and sitting on the fence, and I just say, just you're doing the right stuff. Just keep looking after yourself. Yeah.
Rob, this has been an utter joy. Thank you, mate. I hope we can talk again, because we really have only touched the surface on some of these things. And if you'll forgive me, let me conclude by hijacking your motif. And I say this to you because you're a bloody good dad. To you and to everyone who's listening, and hopefully to myself too. Be present, be brave, be kind. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Gary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.